Welcome back to Modeling Winners, where every day we study one life worth modeling and pull out a few winning tactics you can actually use. Today's episode is Steve Jobs. Sometimes a life turns on one moment. For Steve Jobs, that moment came in 1985 when the board of directors stripped him of power at the company he had built from nothing. Everything before it had been the work of a brilliant fanatic who prioritized soul over survival, beauty over pragmatism, designing circuit boards no customer would ever see with religious precision. Everything after it revealed who he would become, not the prophet shouting from the mountain, but the prophet who learned to speak the language of the valley. Biography of Steve Jobs, the second chapter. Framework, the second chapter. The calligrapher's sermon. It is not that Steve Jobs learned calligraphy at Reed College because he was wise, but because he was lost. The year was 1972, and the boy who had dropped out, disappointing his working-class parents, sat in a monastery quiet classroom, studying the space between letters. While his peers were building resumes, he was contemplating Ceres. The modern world calls this impractical. The truth is, it was the most practical thing he ever did. His father, Paul, had taught him a paradox. The back of a fence should look as good as the front. Not because anyone would see it, but because you would know. This is the doctrine of hidden integrity, and it is madness by the standards of quarterly earnings. Yet, it is the only sanity that survives the long run. The boy absorbed this lesson not as a rule, but as a religion. Years later, he would insist that a circuit board inside a sealed plastic case, a board no customer would ever glimpse, be laid out with geometric beauty. The engineers thought him mad. The truth was simpler. He had discovered that invisible righteousness produces visible radiance. The pirate ship burns. By 1984, Jobs had built a machine that could think in pictures. The Macintosh was supposed to change everything. He flew a skull and crossbones flag over the engineering building, calling his team pirates. He pushed them toward perfection. The mouse had to glide like thought itself. The interface had to welcome the user like a friend. The world had grown accustomed to beige tyranny, computers that punish their operators with arcane commands. Jobs declared war on that world. But here is the great reversal. The Macintosh was too perfect for its moment. Underpowered, overpriced, it stumbled in the marketplace. The board of directors, those custodians of the practical, grew nervous. They watched the visionary spending millions on aesthetic details, while sales figures sagged. The tension was ancient. The profits versus the accountants. The cathedral versus the quarterly report. In 1985, the board stripped him of power. The man who had co-founded Apple was exiled from his own creation. He was 30 years old, publicly humiliated, and absolutely certain the world had gone mad. The truth, of course, was that he had gone mad, but only in the sense that all great builders go mad. He had prioritized soul over survival, beauty over pragmatism, the eternal over the immediate. The board was not wrong to fear him. He was not wrong to refuse compromise. This is the nature of the catastrophic gift. It breaks its bearer before it breaks the world. The Wilderness Factory. Next computer company was Jobs' answer to rejection. He would build an even more perfect machine. He spent millions designing a black cube. He painted the factory walls in precisely calibrated shades of gray. He hired the finest engineers and gave them limitless budgets. The result was a computer so elegant it belonged in a museum, and so expensive almost no one bought it. This was the valley. Not the dramatic valley of bankruptcy or scandal, but the grinding valley of irrelevance. Next limped along, burning through capital, producing machines that critics admired and customers ignored. During this period, Jobs learned the lesson that only failure teaches. A signal requires a receiver. Beauty without utility is self-indulgence. Perfection that serves no one is simply pride in a tuxedo. "I wasn't as smart as I thought I was," he would later admit, speaking of his first reign at Apple. The wilderness years were not wasted. They were the tuition for his real education. He learned to listen. He learned to wait. He learned that the prophet must descend from the mountain and speak in the language of the valley, or the revelation dies with him. The animation gospel. While Next struggled in dignified obscurity, Jobs made a seemingly random purchase, a small computer graphics division from George Lucas. He paid $5 million for Pixar, expecting to sell hardware. The creative team, led by a gentle animator named John Lasseter, had other ideas. They wanted to tell stories. Jobs, the man obsessed with silicon and circuits, found himself funding artists. He poured $50 million of his own money into this struggling studio. For years, there was no return. The board, for Pixar had a board now, and boards are always nervous, questioned the investment. But Jobs had learned something in the wilderness. Sometimes the signal is not in the machine, but in the meaning the machine enables. Toy Story premiered in 1995 and changed cinema forever. not because of technical wizardry alone, but because it proved that digital tools could carry ancient human truth, friendship, mortality, the fear of being replaced. Jobs had discovered the paradox. Technology reaches its highest calling when it disappears into art. Pixar became the most joyful place he ever built, a place where creativity was protected from corporate noise, where patience was rewarded with wonder. The bankrupt kingdom reclaimed. In 1997, Apple was 90 days from death. The company Jobs had founded 21 years earlier was producing dozens of confusing products, none of them profitable. The board, desperate, invited the exile home. He returned not as a supplicant, but as a surgeon. He walked into the boardroom, drew a four-quadrant grid on a whiteboard, and announced, "Desktop, portable, consumer, pro. We will make four great products. Everything else dies." He canceled 70% of the product line. The engineers panicked. The distributors protested. The press predicted disaster. Jobs was unmoved. He had learned in the wilderness that saying no to 1,000 good ideas is the only way to say yes to one great one. This is the discipline of subtraction, and it is harder than addition because it requires killing your darlings. The iMac arrived in 1998, a translucent blue machine that looked like candy and worked like magic. It had no floppy drive, heresy, but it connected to the internet in minutes. Revelation. Sales exploded. Apple was saved not by doing more, but by doing less, better. The man who had been exiled for perfectionism saved the company by perfecting simplicity. This is the great reversal. Act 2 Jobs succeeded because Act 1 Jobs had failed. The pocket revolution. Jobs now saw clearly the personal computer was not the destination, but the hub. People were drowning in digital chaos, photos scattered, music files hoarded, videos trapped on clunky camcorders. In 2001, he unveiled the iPod. It was not the first MP3 player. It was merely the first one humans actually enjoyed using. 1,000 songs in your pocket, the ads promised. But the real promise was simpler. You will not need to think. The scroll wheel let you navigate your entire library with one thumb. Any song was 3 clicks away. This was not innovation through complexity, but through ruthless elimination of friction. The truth is, the best technology is invisible technology. It serves without demanding gratitude. Then came January 2007. An iPod, a phone, an internet communicator, Jobs announced from the Macworld stage. Are you getting it? These are not three separate devices. This is one device. He held up the iPhone, a slab of glass that responded to touch like a living thing. He had obsessed over the scrolling physics. Lists had to bounce at the edges, mimicking real-world inertia. Critics called it the Jesus phone, and they were not entirely joking. Jobs had effectively put the internet in 6 billion pockets. We now live in the world his hands shaped. The mortality lesson. In 2004, doctors found a rare tumor in his pancreas. Jobs, brilliant in silicon, foolish in biology, initially refused surgery, trying alternative therapies. I wasn't as smart as I thought I was when I tried to treat cancer with fruit juice, he would later reflect, his voice quieter. By the time he relented, the cancer had spread. A liver transplant bought time, but not escape. The disease sharpened him. In 2005, he stood before Stanford graduates and delivered a philosophy. Death is very likely the single best invention of life. It clears out the old to make way for the new. He urged them, "Your time is limited, so don't waste it living someone else's life." This was not corporate speak. This was a man glimpsing the end, choosing to spend his final energy on truth. He used his remaining years to finish the iPad and design Apple Park, a circular spaceship of a campus where engineers and designers would collide in sunlit hallways, where the grain of wood on tables would matter, where the building itself would teach the lesson, beauty is not ornament, beauty is structure revealed. The cathedral he left. Apple Park opened after his death. It is a temple to the doctrine of hidden integrity, ventilation shafts as art, doorways that whisper rather than slam, glass panels that required new manufacturing techniques. Jobs hated cubicles. He believed isolation killed creativity. So he built a ring of connection, a place where accidental conversation could spark the next revolution. The modern world mocks such obsession. Wasteful, the accountants mutter. Impractical, the efficiency experts declare. But Jobs understood. The where shapes the what. A beautiful space does not guarantee beautiful work, but a soulless space guarantees soulless work. He built a cathedral, because cathedrals change the people who enter them. The signal that endures. Steve Jobs died on October 5th, 2011. He was not a saint. He could be cruel to subordinates, distant from family, arrogant in his certainties. But his second act redeemed his first. The exile returned wiser. The perfectionist learned simplicity, The prophet descended from the mountain and spoke in products the world could actually use. His great lesson is not about technology. Technology is merely the medium. His great lesson is about resurrection. Act 1 failed because it was incomplete. Act 2 succeeded because failure had completed it. The board was right to exile him in 1985. Apple could not survive his first draft intensity. The world was right to welcome him back in 1997. Only failure teaches the wisdom success requires. Your first story does not have to be your last story. The wilderness is not punishment. It is preparation. The thing that breaks you may be the thing that finally makes you useful. Jobs built his greatest work not despite his exile, but because of it. He returned to Apple not as the boy genius, but as the man who had learned to die to himself. That is the shape of every second chapter. Something must die so something better can be born. The translucent iMac, the white earbuds, the glass slab that thinks, these are not his legacy. His legacy is the proof that humiliation is not the end, that exile is not final, that the second version of yourself can redeem the first. He showed us you can be thrown out of your own kingdom and still return to build a better one. The back of the fence still matters. Hidden integrity still radiates, and the story you are writing now may merely be the research for the story you will write next.
Signals to swipe. The moment is ripe.
Let me say what hidden integrity is and is not, because most of what you hear about making things well is wrong.
Right. And with Steve Jobs especially, people misread the perfectionism as some kind of aesthetic vanity.
The first signal is what his father taught him, the back of the fence test. It means the side no one sees should be as good as the side everyone sees.
But people think this is about obsessive-compulsive tidiness or showing off, like you are polishing things for applause.
Jobs proved the opposite. In 1984, he insisted that the circuit board inside the sealed Macintosh case be geometrically beautiful. No customer would ever see it. The engineers thought he was mad.
So it is not about public reputation at all?
Not at all. The other misread? People think it is about wasted time, like you are being inefficient by caring about invisible details.
But the hidden work changes the visible result.
Exactly. Next time you are choosing between good enough and slightly better on something no one will see, pick the harder option. Spend the extra 5 minutes. Use the better material. Say to yourself, I will know.
Within a week, you feel different about your own standards. The invisible choice changes the visible chooser.
The second signal comes from his return to Apple in 1997. The company was 90 days from bankruptcy, drowning in dozens of confusing products.
And the common mistake here is thinking more options equal more success, like abundance is always better than focus.
Jobs walked into the boardroom and drew a 4-quadrant grid. Desktop or portable, consumer or professional. He forced every product into one box and killed everything else.
So it is not about working harder on more things.
No. The other misread? People think simplicity is lazy, like you are avoiding complexity because you cannot handle it.
But Jobs proved simplicity is surgical. It takes courage to say no.
Next time you are overwhelmed by too many priorities or projects, draw a 2x2 grid. Label your 2 core dimensions. Force every item into one box. Kill what does not fit. Say, we are doing 4 things well, not 40 things poorly.
The panic of too much transforms into the focus of just this.
The third signal is the one thumb rule. Jobs famously said any song on the iPod should be reachable in 3 clicks.
People mistake this for dumbing things down, like you are removing power to chase simplicity.
But Jobs was designing for a user with 1 free hand and 0 patience. The complexity was still there in the system. He just hid it from the user.
So it is not about reducing capability.
It is about reducing friction. The other misread, thinking simplicity happens by accident, like clean design is a natural byproduct of good engineering.
But Jobs showed it takes brutal discipline. Every extra step is a decision to keep the user waiting.
Next time you are designing an interface, writing an email, or explaining a process, imagine the user has only 1 free hand. Can they complete the task in 3 moves or fewer? If not, delete steps. Say, any song in 3 clicks.
What you hide is as important as what you show.
If this episode gave you one useful signal to carry into the week, subscribe at modelingwinners.com. Free subscribers get 1 fresh story each week, and paid members get daily episodes, companion audio, accountability nudges, and waffle-style progress charts, filling in each day you take action.
Your problem is older than you think. Someone before you
stood at the same brink. They had nothing but nerve, no map, no guide. Their ceiling's your floor. Step inside.
Pattern recognition, one life at a time. History's best playbook, still in their prime. You don't need a mentor, just a battery. Model the winners, take what you need.
Steal from the best, they're not using it anymore.
Every challenge you face has been solved before.